called Ben had understood her today. Kishik had spoken many human words, most of them sad. Over time, Ayark realized her new sister had been living as a slave of the humans. Life with the Tuskens was not freedom, because the Tuskens were not free, bound and cursed as they were to inhabit the blasted lands. To Kishik, pale and miserable, it was almost more horrible than death. Ayark often expected her to vanish into the wind. But as a long chain of Tuscan torturers had found, where humans were concerned, fragile bodies often contained durable spirits. Yark allowed both Ayark and Kishik to learn the ways of the warriors. He had assumed, correctly, that Kishik would learn their ways faster, and had defended his daughters against all criticism. "There will come a day when all must fight," he had told the elders. "We are too few." While Kishik learned the Tuscan words, both sisters learned combat. Ayark saw that humans had great potential, as Kishik's talent continually amazed. But something more startling was to come over the horizon from the cities and into the Tuscan camp. A volunteer. Sherrod Het had ventured willingly into the wastes, bent on suicide, or rather, on joining the Tuskens, which was much the same thing. A settler taken by force could enter the tribe, as Kishik had, but there was an important difference. The Tuskens had chosen Kishik. Sherrod Het had presumed much, and had to be broken. Ayark's people certainly tried. But Sherrod had survived the punishments and emerged stronger. The elders whispered he had been part of some ancient and foreign army suffused with powers from angry spirits. And Sherrod carried a great and magical weapon, something no common settler carried. A shining green blade of energy. In time, Sherrod earned the garb and Guderfi of a Tuscan, showing his face to the sky for the last time. He took fellow human Kishik as his mate, a match not of convenience but affection, and together they had a son, Usherrod. But Kishik had not lived to see their child grow. Might against the enemy was one thing, but Tatooine posed threats of its own. Not long after her son's birth, Kishik disappeared into a sandstorm. Vanished into the wind. But Ayark had not grieved over the loss of her sister. The presence of the child had bound Sherrod to the Tuskens for life. Freely using the terrible powers and weapon at his disposal, Sherrod became a war leader, training his son alongside him. Ayark saw little of the humans in those times. With her permissive father dead, her lot became that of any other female in the tribe. She took a spouse, she bore children. The group swelled as survivors of other clans joined, and for a time, the Tuskens were strong. Under Sherrod, structure had replaced chaos. Leadership, something every Tuscan defied on principle, seeped into practice as Sherrod could have his way on any issue. They feared him, yes, but they also followed. Sherrod had never believed the Tuscans were a cursed people. With such a warrior, a wizard really, the Tuscans could escape their fate and become mighty indeed. But that, too, was presumption. For other forces existed on Tatooine, more powerful than any single warrior. The greatest of the Hutts, Jabba, had for some reason manipulated Tuscan tribes across the Jundland into an all-out war with the settlers, a fight that had claimed the life of Ayark's oldest son, just 6 cycles old. An answer had to be given. and Sherrod had led her clan and others into battle against the Hutts. But Jabba brought many thralls to battle that day, and countless Tusken warriors died, including her spouse Dean. Sherrod had died too. Even Sherrod's son vanished, although no Tusken ever found the body. A bad omen, and it told true. The makeshift Tusken alliance forged by Sherrod collapsed, with the surviving clans melting away into the hillsides. A Yark, a mother holding two little children, found herself forced to hold together what remained of her tribe. The few warriors that had survived were damaged, physically and spiritually, able to carry Gaderfi, but unable to command others. Sherrod had left no successor. A Yark hadn't sought the role of war leader. There was enough to do, simply making sure the clan ate. But when no one rose, she did. It had once been her father's tribe, after all. They had seen her ride with warriors before, and more than ever, her decimated people understood the meaning of their creed. Whoever has two hands can hold the Gaderfi. Losses continued in the decade after Sherrod's death. A Yark had shared in them, losing another son, and later an eye, taken by infection after a wound. The crystal that now sat in its place had been a gift from Sherrod. But the greater blow was to the clan's spirit. When a mightier band of Tuskens vanished literally overnight several years earlier, leaving just the remnants of their camp behind, her group grew increasingly timid. A Yark had tried to revive their spirits by example, and later by daring exploits like the morning raids. After today, though, such things wouldn't be possible. The Shaper had no more clay to spare. A Yark stared back between the stone towers to the tents. Her people wandered wraith-like as if waiting for a final blow. There was no way to prevent such a stroke. Only 7 males of warrior age remained, those she had brought from the gorge, and they lived only because their cowardice had driven them to run the fastest. Of all sand people, a Yark had no objections to arming the rest of the clan. But even with a rifle placed in the hands of every mother, elder, and youngling, the prospects were poor. The Tuskens didn't train. All experience came from combat. They would die before they learned anything. No, it was pointless to resist. The clan would dissolve, its members drifting into bands where they would have no station or standing. Unless... A Yark looked up startled. Yes. When her people had been desperate before, Sherrod had used his powers to give them purpose. In fact, he had brought larger groups to his side. With a similar leader, the Yark clan might become more than the rump of a once mighty tribe. A Yark's group could become the nucleus of a second united front, crushing the settlers once and for all. With another Sherrod. With Ben. If Ben was another Sherrod, the Tuskens couldn't afford to see him allied with the settlers, to be sure. But what if he could be made to join the Tuskens? He would have to be compelled. He had already shown violence to her people inside the Oasis store. But compelled, how? Ben seemed to want to protect the storekeeper, but there was no chance of using the woman for leverage. Another foray against the compound was out of the question. Humans were odd creatures, forming attachments to irrelevant beings and things. Perhaps there was someone else Ben cared for on Tatooine that he would do anything to protect. Even if it meant becoming a Tusken himself. Eyes wide open, a Yark resolved to find out. Her exhausted body coursed again with energy and will. If a pressure point existed, a Yark would discover it and exploit it. But first, her youngest child had to be put to bed. Chapter 21. Ben had said little on the way home from the gorge. Annalene had been the opposite, asking one question after another as their speeder bike moved into the lengthening shadows of the western Jundland. What happened in the store with Ulbrich? What was the name that Plug-Eye, a Yark, said to you? And how did you recognize it, especially when you're new to Tatooine? He'd never answered, acting as if he couldn't hear over the whine of the bike. And maybe he couldn't. Annalene had driven slower and slower, hoping to disarm him of that excuse. It hadn't worked. "You're losing altitude," he'd said. "Well, I won't argue that." Annalene felt the weight of the day on her shoulders as she coasted toward Ben's hovel. "Here we are," she said, activating the brakes. Earlier, near the gorge, they'd briefly debated going back to the claim so he could pick up his EOP. But night was falling, and even with the local Tusken seemingly at bay, it was still Tatooine. Other predators moved in the dark. "Thank you," he said, climbing off the hovering bike. She looked up at his house. He'd made a little headway in cleaning up the surrounding area, but not much. "I'll run in at dawn tomorrow to fetch Rue," he said. "You won't even know I'm there." Annalene climbed off the vehicle and followed. "You know my offer still stands if you want to save yourself a walk. My guest room's empty tonight. I'd love to have you..."
"No!"
Then, seemingly embarrassed, he adopted a calmer expression.
"I mean, I'm sure your family and store will need all your attention after today. You don't need company underfoot."
"I'll have it, whether I want it or not," she said, remembering the usual after-action routine of the vigilantes. Would they really expect a party in a Tusken ravaged store?
"Yeah, probably," she thought.
"I'll leave you to it then," Ben said. He began walking toward his house.
"I hope your patron is doing better."
Annalene blanched as she recalled the sight of the injured Rodian.
"Poor Bomer," she said. "I was thinking about him earlier, too. He always sat there staring. I never knew why. But I just imagined such a sadness in his life to make him sit there. For him to get hurt like that?"
Ben stopped and looked back.
"It wasn't sadness."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, I saw him today, and on my first trip there as well."
Ben clasped his hands together.
"I could tell. That wasn't sadness. That was contentment."
Annalene stared.
"How do you know?"
"It's just a feeling," he said, blue eyes looking off into the setting suns. "But I've seen sadness before in all kinds of faces. Bomer was content. The drink you brought him in the morning, the table he sat at. It was his place in the universe. But he got hurt there, protecting the place he loved. I think he'll be okay with that."
Ben turned and began walking again up the hill in silence. Annalene thought back to Ben talking about loss earlier in the day. He was struggling with something, she could tell. Something pretty bad. But at the same time, he seemed so centered. Centered in the middle of nowhere. She fumbled for words before finally settling on three. "Who are you?"
He laughed.
"Ben, we've been over this."
"No joke." Annalene shook her head. "Freelance philosopher of the desert, doctoring and rescuing."
"I don't think it happened that way. You'll remember it differently later."
Annalene stood at the foot of the hill and put her hands on her hips.
"Well, you're wasting your talent out here. Someone like you, you ought to be doing something."
She paused before going ahead with the impetuous addition.
"Or you ought to have a family to watch over."
Ben paused. He looked over his shoulder at her, the little smile back on his face.
"Well, you never know.
Perhaps I already have a family to watch over." Annalene rolled her eyes. She turned and climbed onto her speeder bike.
Oh! Ben called suddenly. He reached into the folds of his cloak and retrieved something rectangular from his pocket. I just realized in the commotion, I still have your datapad. Keep it, Annalene said, grinding the throttle. Souvenir of a crazy day. But the safari, your application. I'm not going anywhere, she said. There's a new species to study right here. She released the brake and soared away. As stressful days for Annalene went, this one already ranked only behind Jabe's difficult breech berth. And it wasn't over. After Ben, she stopped by Doc Mel's place. Learning that Bomer was sedated and resting in Bastine, she returned home, anticipating a mess of a store, and another war when she found Jabe. He'd skipped out on work, taken up with trashy friends, and defied her by going after Tuscans twice. It was one thing to arrive butt first into the world, but Jabe was going for the endurance record. She wasn't surprised to see lights on inside the claim, with land speeders scattered about. What did surprise her was the claim itself, once she stepped through the door. Yes, there were drunkards celebrating, more than she'd ever seen in the place before, but the store itself was spotless. The gun counter and shelves had been repaired. The nasty smears on the floor were gone, and products were back on their shelves, reasonably close to where they belonged. The smell was even gone. Raising a drink from within a gathering of mostly male revelers, Lily smiled at her. "Everyone who didn't go with the posse pitched in," she said. "It gave us something to do." Annalene looked around, suspicious. She didn't trust anyone to be in her store without a Cowell present. "Everything still here?" "We might have fed ourselves a little off the shelves, but it's a small price, no?" Annalene walked up to her friend. Even for a Zeltron, Lily looked flushed. The party had been going for a while. Annalene recognized her friend's husband, Waller, in the mix, telling his own tales from the assault on the Tuscans. "Who's with your kids?"
"The guard droids," Waller called out, toasting with an empty mug. "Plug Eyes finished. The droids are all we need."
"All we need tonight," Oren said, clearing his throat loudly from behind the bar. He was a startling sight, having donned his spare set of fancy city clothes from the office and an apron over them. Host and bartender, he refilled glasses with a smile. He spotted Annalene and nodded to the empty bottles. "I'm keeping track." "No, you're not." Annalene approached. "Give me whatever's left," she said, settling wearily on a stool at her own bar. Oren was already pouring. "You were out there, weren't you?" He laughed. "Annie, you're a marvel. What was it Danar said? You can't spell adrenaline without Annalene." "Danar never could spell," she said, taking the glass. "That's why he hired me." She downed the drink in 3 seconds and deposited the glass on the bar in front of him. "Now, what did you think you were doing taking Jabe out there?" Oren's smile crumpled for a moment before a young voice saved him. "Don't blame him, Mom. It wasn't his idea." Annalene glared as Jabe stepped in from outside. The boy paused before Oren. "While Ulbrecht's gone, sir." "Blast," Oren said, shaking his head. "I'd hope to rub the big victory in his face." He looked around the room and raised his voice. "Everyone knows the settler's call works now, right? This place is the proof." A ragged, drunken cheer went up. Annalene ignored it. She slid off the stool and blocked Jabe from reaching the happy crowd. "Jabe, you have to stop."
"Stop what?"
"I'm too tired for the list," she said, clutching at his shirt. "But let's start with the gorge."
"You were killing."
"Killing Tuscans?" The boy waved his hands theatrically. "They're not civilized, Mom."
They're not anything.
You don't know that, Annalene said.
They're not womp rats that you can shoot for fun.
Jade wrenched away from her grasp.
They killed Dad. They tried to kill all of us today.
I know.
But nothing. I at least did something.
Anger flared in the young man's eyes.
Did you do anything after Dad died?
Annalene froze, staring at her child. He looked more like Danar every day, even as he acted like someone she'd never met.
I did do something after he died, she said finally. I opened the store the next day.
In a chillier tone, she added, like he would have wanted. Jabe pushed past his mother. She didn't stop him.
He paused at the bar to speak to Oren in a loud voice, for the benefit of his mother.
With Zed laid up, you've got an opening on your lead vaporator team. I'm available.
No, he's not, Annalene called out from behind him.
Drying his hands on a dish towel, Oren smiled awkwardly at the boy.
She calls the tune, son.
Sorry. Oren nodded to Annalene, who didn't respond. A moment later, Oren leaned over and spoke in lower tones. There's other ways you can help me, I'm sure.
Annalene threw up her hands. You can help him by cleaning up whatever's left of this place tonight. I'm done.
Grabbing a pre-packed meal from behind the counter and an open bottle, she pushed past her son and trudged through the crowd to her living quarters. The sound from the celebration continued to reverberate throughout the claim and into her household most of the night, but she didn't hear much of it. She ate wearily and dragged herself to bed. As her head hit the pillow, Annalene had one last thought, that she had not seen Callie since her return. But her body rejected any further worries for one day, and her mind surrendered itself to sleep.
Meditation. I don't know what you can see from where you are, Qui-Gon, but I doubt you missed today's trip. No, once again, I wasn't intending for it to be a big production. You don't have to tell me what our mutual teacher used to say. I don't crave excitement or adventure, or rather, I crave them not, as he would have put it. I was going to the store for water, on a day when nobody was supposed to be there. That's all. I thought my tricky moment for the day was running into the little old man from the incident at Anchorhead. He seems to be a regular at the claim. When he didn't remember me, I thought I was free. Instead, I got into a riot and a range war. And I forgot all about the water. And my EOP. Will there be a galactic incident every time I want to get out of the house? Because I can stay home in that case. Really, it won't be a problem. Then again, it was certainly good I was there, given what happened at the store. I'm not so sure about the second part of the afternoon, though, heading off after Jabe. There wasn't any stopping what occurred there. It's so difficult seeing things like that and doing nothing. But I guess I'd rather see and do nothing than not see at all. I'm missing so much of what's going on in other places. I can't live blindfolded. It's not really the Kenobi way. Speaking of what I saw, I'm not so sure I like the side I saw of Oren Gault today. He had to save face after the compound was attacked, that much I understand. But he wields an awful lot of power here. These people listen to him. He must know that. There's responsibility that goes along with that. Maybe I'm being too harsh. He acted the way he did because his family and friends were in danger. But we both know where that particular excuse can lead. The Tuskens, well, that was another surprise. But maybe it shouldn't have been. I'd met the man Ayak knew long ago and heard the story about him later on. I'm straining to remember more details about that. Maybe later. Then there's Annalene. I was tempted to call her the intrepid Annalene just now.
because she seems to be able to deal with whatever horror this planet can imagine. That's what I need to become. Absolutely familiar with all the dangers here. She takes them in stride. Not because she's fearless, but because she knows she has to go on to take care of all the people in her life. That's not a bad role model to have. I guess I can become the intrepid Kenobi if I must. If I'm going to go on, and we both know I must, I'm going to have to find a way to stop tearing myself up over what happened. There's pain, yes, but a lot of it lately is self-inflicted. Like this. You see what I'm holding here? Again. A last remembrance, I've told myself. But I'm putting it away now. And I would be a lot better off if I put it away once and for all and tried to go on. Like Annalene has had to do. I can learn something from her, I think. And yet, when I think about her, I have to consider... Wait. Hold on. Someone's here.
Chapter 22.
Kenobi. Annalene rubbed her eyes. What? Kenobi, Callie said, beaming across a cup of blue milk. That's his name. What? Annalene glowered at her daughter. Annalene had risen at the usual deathly hour, remembering Callie's absence from the night before. But the girl was here now, at the breakfast table in the family quarters, wide awake and positively quivering with excitement. It's his name, Callie said. Name whose name? Ben's name. Annalene stepped forward. How do you know that? Jabe called from the larder. She went to his house. Annalene turned toward the counter where Jabe had thankfully prepared her high-test meltdown calf. She downed a swig and turned back to the table. Now, what? She went to his house, Jabe repeated, bringing a plate to the table. Bleary-eyed, he looked as if he'd slept in his clothes. Ben's house. Annalene gawked. Before I took him home yesterday? No. Callie dug into her breakfast as if nothing was wrong. It was after he got back, while he was there, after you left. Wait, you were there at night? Annalene asked. Alone, Jabe added, drawing a glare from his sister. At night? Alone. Annalene's whole body shook. With Ben? Callie smirked. Calm down, Mom. Your eyes are going all Rodian on me. Annalene fought the urge to go outside and scream. Instead, she refilled her cup and sat down at the table beside a snickering Jabe. All right, she said, rubbing the back of her hand against her forehead. From the beginning. Subdued, Callie explained. I took the light van out, like you'd said, to get rid of the bodies. I meant we'd get Oren's hands to help do that, not for you to go alone. It was horrible, Mom. The smell was driving the dewbacks berserk, and it wasn't good for me either. Callie's small nose crinkled. Once I got out there, I just unhooked the hover pallet and left it. Believe me, you'll never want to use it again. One more expense, Annalene frowned. And then? Then I swung past Hunter's Gorge, but it was all over by then. The land speeders were leaving, and I saw the two of you heading for Ben's place. I wanted to make sure you were okay. So you followed us? I tried, but your bike was a lot faster than the light van. When I got there, you must have already left. If I was already gone, how did you know you were even at the right place? Annalene asked. Callie pointed behind the counter. You circled his place on the map the other day after you came home. I could have been marking a Sarlacc pit to avoid. But you weren't, Callie said. And you told me about the curtain on his door. Annalene scowled.
And you talked to him? I can't believe you bothered him at...
Oh, he didn't know I was there, Callie said. At least I think he didn't. I was kind of hanging around outside.
Annalene stood up abruptly, her chair squeaking against the stone floor.
You peeked in on him? I couldn't see much. I don't care.
Annalene looked at the ceiling, mortified. You invaded the man's privacy?
Jabe shook his head between bites. Glad it's not me this time. Callie sneered.
Shut up.
Wait, Annalene said, turning.
You thought I was in there, didn't you?
In this man's house.
Callie blushed.
The thought did cross my mind.
So you listened at his door?
It's not a door, it's a curtain. And I didn't stay long,
her daughter said. How long?
A couple of hours.
Annalene gawked.
A couple of hours?
I needed to make sure you weren't in another room, Callie said, smiling meekly. And it got interesting.
I don't care how interesting it was, Annalene said. You could have gotten killed out there at night.
But I didn't.
Annalene shook her head. There was never any good answer to that where her kids were concerned. They'd had the safety argument again and again. A danger survived was no danger at all, to hear them tell it. Moreover, intrusion on this scale was an entirely new entry in the portfolio of her children's misdeeds. And that made the episode all the worse. What made Callie think that was acceptable?
Annalene found her chair and let gravity take hold. Callie took her mother's vacant expression as a signal to go on.
His name's Kenobi. Someone called him that? He called himself that, Callie said. I couldn't see who he was talking to, but he said it. He was just sitting there, talking about his day and the people he'd met and the Tuskens.
Annalene looked at her with skepticism.
You're not just making this up.
She tried the name out.
Ben Kenobi.
She'd known other customers by the surname over the years and seen it spelled several different ways on her receipts.
Jabe dabbed up the last of the gravy on his plate.
Lots of Kenobis around. There's the couple near Bildor's Canyon.
There was that pod racer pilot,
Callie interjected excitedly. No, he was immune.
Please don't start this, Annalene said. I already have a headache. Just tell me what he said.
All of it.
Callie's smirk returned as she wiped off a blue milk mustache.
I thought you wanted to protect his privacy. A little late now.
Speak.
Callie told as best she could what she could remember.
Ben Kenobi was upset about his trip to the claim. Upset that he kept walking into disruptions. He was troubled by what he'd seen at the gorge. Who wouldn't be, Annalene thought. And he wasn't thrilled with how Orin had led the assault.
Jabe rolled his eyes at that. And then he talked about the intrepid Annalene.
And then?
Annalene asked.
And then nothing,
Callie said.
He heard me, or heard something. I dashed back over the hill to where I'd left the light van.
Jabe snorted.
Did he come out after you with a big metal cleaver?
No,
Callie shrugged.
Well, if he did, I didn't see.
She bit her lip.
But now that I think about it, earlier, I did see something.
Annalene was almost afraid to ask.
What? Well, he was sitting, like I said, with his back to me. And he was in front of this trunk. And I think he was holding something. Something special, I think. He talked about putting it away. And then he did.
Jabe stared.
What was it?
If I knew that, I would have told you, Callie said. Idiot.
Annalene sat back underneath the spell.
And yet when I think about her, I have to consider.
She looked up and sputtered.
What in the great pit is that supposed to mean? You sure he didn't say any more?
Any more about you, you mean?
Callie!
No, Callie said, leaning dejectedly with her elbow against the table.
And he didn't say anything at all about me.
Jabe smirked.
The ingratitude. After you let him save you and all.
Callie grumbled.
Yeah.
Annalene struggled to take it all in.
And you say there was no one else there?
I don't think there was, but I don't know. Annalene thought. He could have been speaking to someone on a comm system, yes, although transmissions from the Junlund were often problematic. Or he could have been dictating.
Or he could have that secret family he was talking about. Was that what Callie had seen him holding? Some possession that reminded him of the family he'd left behind? That might explain some of the sadness that seemed to hang over him at times.
Jabe had another explanation.
He sounds deranged, he said, rising with his dishes. Crazy kook, sitting in the wilderness, talking to himself.
You don't know that, Annalene said. And that crazy kook helped save us here. And helped me track you down to the canyon.
Where I was in no danger at all, Jabe said, wiping his hands. You were in worse trouble out there alone with him.
Annalene looked down.
We weren't very alone when the Tuscans showed up.
I mean besides that, Jabe said. What do you know about this guy?
Not enough, evidently.
Annalene stopped to reflect.
After a few moments, she laughed. Don't you see, Callie? He heard you. He knew you were out there. That was all for your benefit.
Callie rose from the table.
Think that if you want. But I think Ben Kenobi thinks about you.
She patted her mother on the back as she passed. Annalene put her head in her hands.
I can't believe this. I've raised a sadist and a voyeur. Are both my children insane?
Standing in the open doorway with his sister, Jabe answered.
I don't know, Mom. You're the one who took off after the Tuscans with the crazy man.
As her kids headed off to work, Annalene sat motionless at the table.
He's not crazy, she said,
her face twisting into a frown. He just talks to himself. Setting aside her cup, she decided the matter deserved more thought. Then, she promptly fell asleep in the chair.
Chapter 23.
King of the Junlund!
Orin just nodded and waved as the family of four cruised past, cheering him as they departed the oasis. There was no use being modest now. The vigilantes had won a historic battle the day before, and word had spread across the region. Orin would see that it reached the Deveronians in Mos Eisley, too. They'd know he'd avenge their partner without delay, and there might yet be hope for the hotel contract. Even after the late-night celebration, Orin had risen early in anticipation of starting his good day as soon as possible. So far, it had exceeded his hopes. Everyone around knew this was the day of the week he kept his office hours in the claim, and many had visited him. The plaudits from his neighbors were nice, but more important, people he'd intended to make calls on were arriving to subscribe to the fund's protection services. Success sells. He hadn't let anything get him down today. Not when Ulbrich had arrived at the claim after breakfast, armed with a new batch of stories with which to bore the clientele. Orin would wait to pitch him again on the settler's call after the man had run out of people to torture. Nor had his expensive meeting with Glomer the mechanic bothered him. It was funny that while most of the damage the Tuscans had done to the claim had already been repaired,
The most lasting harm had been caused when his spoiled daughter put Annalene's X-31 into the stone wall. Repairs would park Annalene's land speeder for weeks. Oren would happily loan her a vehicle from his work fleet. But he'd let Vika, whose Sportster was in even worse shape, find her own rides for a while. Maybe slowing down would be good for her. No, the only thing that attested his smile was old number one. His technicians were finding what he'd realized earlier. The vaporator mechanism had survived. Tough things, these pre-Tormans. But Danar's precious settings had been lost. The first test vial had produced what Oren judged an absolutely pedestrian cocktail of two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen. Later tests yielded no better results and sickened his heart. But sorrow would wait today. Every visitor had brought him something. Business, congratulations, even a sugar cake. And now, as he saw another figure approaching on foot from the southwest, he wondered what good tidings this person brought. Oren squinted. Well, I'll be, he thought. He stood tall and waved. Hey, Kenobi! Ben Kenobi! For a moment, the hooded man appeared to disappear back behind the dune. But when Oren charged up the rise, he found Ben kneeling to adjust his boot. I thought that was you, Oren said. Ben stood. As Oren shook his hand vigorously, Ben said, I'm sorry, I thought I heard you say, Ben Kenobi. That's your name, isn't it? Ben looked down, around, and back at Oren. Yes, but... But what? Oren smiled. I was just curious how you heard it. Oh! Oren laughed loudly and slapped Ben on the back. You'll find out when you go inside. He turned toward the store, coaxing Ben along. Perhaps another day. Ben pointed past the store. I wasn't going inside. I'm just here for my EOP. A high-pitched shout came from the claim. Ben! The men looked over to see Callie in the open doorway of the store, waving frenetically. Annalene stood behind her, looking a little embarrassed. I think you're going in, brother. Oren put his hand on Ben's shoulder. Kenobi. There was a Kenobi down around Arnthout, sold damper coils for repulsor lifts. You any relation? Anything's possible. Ben smiled narrowly, teeth clenched together, as Oren pushed him toward the doorway. Callie stepped outside to greet him. She smiled.
Rue's been waiting for you, Ben.
Annalene walked up, grabbed her daughter by the shoulder blades, and pivoted her 180 degrees. You, elsewhere, now. Callie looked back at Ben, flashed her teeth, and dashed happily back inside the store. Oren laughed. Ben looked to Annalene.
Really, I'm just here for the EOP.
Nonsense, Oren said. Eight settlers call holdouts had wised up and joined up today. Maybe Ben was number nine. A drink for our new neighbor! Oren held the door open for Ben. The man stepped forward, only to be stopped by Annalene. She looked up at him.
Before you walk in, I just want to say, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what you have to apologize for, Ben said.
Then he stepped inside the claim.
Kenobi!
The man's eyes widened at the sound of the name called out by the clutch of people at the end of the bar. But Oren guided him inside. Lily Pace looked back from her packages and waved.
Hey there, Ben Kenobi.
By the sundries aisle, Doc Mel told his child.
There's that Ben Kenobi. I think he's a doctor, too.
And at the bar, Jabe contributed a glare as he wiped down the counter.
Crazy old Ben. Still talking to yourself?
Ben looked at Annalene, and then back at Oren. The visitor was slightly bemused, Oren was glad to see. It happened this way all the time. People came to the Oasis wanting to keep to themselves for whatever reason, not knowing that small-town life made privacy completely impossible. Seeing Wal Obrig approaching, Orin shot Ben an apologetic look.
"You're the fellow from yesterday," the old man said, tugging at the sleeve of Ben's robe like a tailor droid checking a seam. "You're a Kenobi?"
Ben pulled his sleeve back.
"I hired a Kenobi once. Gormal, they called him. Thief. Stank of spice all the time. I fired him quicker than you can say your name."
"Well, I didn't say my name. To you, anyway."
Ben politely turned away.
"Please excuse me."
Ulbrich followed him.
"You saw me yesterday when them Sandys was here. You saw how many I put on the floor."
Ulbrich gestured to the tables.
"Come tell the folks what I did. Some people won't believe an honest man."
Orin interceded.
"Honestly, Wow.
Another time." He peeled Ben away from the old man and guided him toward the bar.
"Sorry,"
he said, lowering his voice.
"Some people will cling to you like Minox if you let them."
"It's all right,"
Ben said, his eyes settling on Callie as she chattered with some teenage friends.
"I think I know what happened now."
"I'm sorry,"
Annalene said.
"Callie came looking for us and ended up snooping. I'm mortified."
Orin gestured for others to leave the bar, making room for him and Ben.
"Gossip gets around pretty fast where there's not a lot going on."
Ben nodded.
"I would have thought the invasion and massacre would have kept the circuit going for a while."
Orin raised an eyebrow.
"I wouldn't call it a massacre,"
he said, his tone more serious. He didn't like that word.
"It was justice."
Ben looked down, as if aware he'd spoken wrong.
"There aren't innocents among Tuskens, Ben. We know that group was the one that struck us here. But it doesn't really matter. They're predators. Same as a crate."
"Understood."
Orin waved to Jabe to bring over drinks. He didn't want to make Ben squirm too much. Not if he might subscribe to the fund. But he didn't mind taking the man down a bit either. Orin knew Ben's kind. Ben would play modest and detached until he had every woman in the Oasis interested. And then they'd find out he was trouble. Orin just hadn't figured out what kind of trouble yet. Callie's story, blabbed around the bar before lunchtime, added more evidence to the case for crazy. But Ben's actions the day before suggested he might be something else, maybe some kind of Clone Wars veteran who'd lost his nerve for fighting. That would track with a bleeding heart for Tuskens.
Change in tactics, then.
Orin took his glass and toasted.
To keeping people safe.
Ben nodded.
I can live with that.
Orin started his sales pitch anew. This time, he described the Settlers' Call Fund as the best hope for peace. If Tuskens were intelligent, as their encounter with Plug Eyes seemed to suggest, then maybe they could learn, Orin said. If they learned every settler household on the desert was under the same shield, they might turn their attentions to the Western Dune Sea instead.
Let them hassle the Jawas for a change.
He started to talk pricing, knowing that if Kenobi's place were close to the Joondland, he could ask for a sizable fee. But Ben interrupted with something that surprised him.
How much,
Ben asked tentatively,
would it cost to extend your protection out even farther?
He affixed his eyes to the drink in his hands.
Say to where that kidnapping you told me about happened.
What, the Lars place?
Well, around there,
Ben said. Orin noticed Annalene pause nearby. Since they'd started talking, Annalene had circled back and forth, dealing with matters in the store, and yet, Orin noted, she kept swooping back comet-like to the bar, catching an earful where she could.
The Lars place. That's way out there, isn't it, Annie?
Past Motesta Oasis.
she said, turning back to her shelving.
Past Jawa Heights, even.
Orin said, calculating.
What kind of business do you have that need protecting way out there?
Just curious, Ben said casually. You were describing the potential a minute ago. I was just wondering what was feasible.
Orin nodded.
Well, let's see,
he said, pulling a data pad from his vest pocket.
Ben waited as Orin pretended to run the numbers. It was impossible, really. Orin knew there wasn't any prospect of extending patrols to Owen Lar's farm. It was more than 100 kilometers from the oasis, with a chunk of the eastern highlands in the way. The settlers' call would have to install satellite armories farther east before they could even consider it. And they wouldn't, because the fund was, at its roots, a local collective. But Kenobi didn't need to know that.
I would think 1,900 credits a year would cover it, Orin said.
The figure was huge. More than anyone was paying currently, except for Ulbrecht, if he ever bit.
And we'd need that up front to get weapons caches and patrols set up.
He looked Ben in the eye.
I don't know if you can find that.
Ben suppressed a laugh.
I don't know that I can either.
Thought so.
Orin nodded and started to put away the data pad.
Then Ben said something in a softer voice. But I don't know that I can't.
Orin raised an eyebrow. He'd known Kenobi had money enough to buy supplies, but why would anyone of means live and dress as he did?
What kind of work are you?
He was interrupted by a high whine from outside, syncopated with a thum, thum, thum that grew louder every second and rattled cans from the shelves.
Annalene looked up.
What the?
Jade peered out the window behind the counter.
You're not gonna believe this, Mom!
The screech passed from east to west, heading toward the parking lot. Annalene hurried to the side door, Orin alongside her. It took Orin a second to realize what he was looking at. It was a landspeeder, but some idiot had modified it to make it look like a snub fighter, with wings mounted on either side and a long, pointed nose grafted onto the front. The vehicle was painted a shocking red, with orange mock flames on the air intakes. And it was currently making violent revolutions in the sand. Its fake wingtip cannons nearly clipping several of the vehicles parked nearby. The thum, thum, thum resolved into a musical beat. Orin saw now that the central turbine for the ridiculous-looking landspeeder was in fact a giant speaker, blasting sounds that nearly lifted pebbles from the ground. Behind Orin and Annalene, Callie yelled to be heard.
The animals are going crazy! Did the call siren break?
I don't know what it is, Annalene said, gawking. The canopy of the strange vehicle slid forward to reveal the driver, a spindly thing with a leathery face and a head shaped like a teardrop. His cranium tapered off into a gray curl that pointed to the sky. He wore a black trench coat in Tatooine heat. And as he stood up in the driver's compartment, Orin spied not one, but three blaster-bearing shoulder holsters peeking out from underneath. Picking up a jeweled cane, the alien stepped out of the strange speeder. Half the occupants of the store were at the windows now, watching the driver. Two knees divided each of his legs into thirds, and golden anklets shook back and forth as he kicked the sand with his hooves. Any jangling the rings did was purely theoretical, as the speaker continued to boom away.
That's a gossam, Ben said at the window.
That's an idiot, Annalene replied from the doorway. What's he brought with him?
They soon saw. Crammed into the back seat of the vehicle were two enormous green masses, figures that now struggled with each other.
If the driver was a mystery to many of the claim's patrons, all could recognize Gamorreans, the great porcine warriors who worked for any lowlife that would feed them. The two fought, each trying to squeeze through the small space to exit the vehicle. When one finally won out and clambered out on the right, the entire speeder thing nearly flipped over. The Gossam driver berated the Gamorreans, cracking at them with his gem-tipped cane.
"What the blazes is he supposed to be?" Annalene said. Orin froze. Sudden realization washed over him.
No. No, they wouldn't send anyone here. Would they?
It took him just a second to answer his own question. Orin stepped backward into the store, nearly stumbling over his own feet.
The good day had taken a turn.
Chapter 24.
We're here to see Orin Gold,
the shrivel-faced Gossam said, standing in the doorway to the claim.
I can't hear you, Annalene said. You've deafened us all.
She had let the creature enter only after he agreed to turn off the alleged music. That communication had required 2 minutes of makeshift sign language. The Gossam clip-clopped on the sinstone floor. His sickly yellow eyes traced the shelves around him as if taking inventory. He reached for a flask inside his jacket, revealing his blasters for Annalene to see clearly. A swig later, his gray lips smacked loudly.
Ore, ore, ore,
he said, as if trying out a new tongue.
Orin. Orin Gould. Orin Gold. Is one of these sounds familiar to you, Graba?
Orin was missing, but over the shelves, Annalene saw that the door to his office was open. He'd likely gone for his blaster. Behind the counter, Jabe had pulled the pistol from the cash box. Annalene waved him off. If she didn't want Jabe hunting Tuskens, she surely didn't want him killed in a shootout with... what? Whatever these people were.
I'm Bojo Bupa,
the Gossam said, surveying Annalene.
But you will call me Master Bupa.
Not if you don't want me to laugh. Annalene looked to her left. Ben was standing casually at a clothing rack, trying to pay the visitors no mind. But she saw his eyes dart between her and Jabe in a way she found reassuring. The Gamorreans thundered forward, bumping against shelves. Items clattered to the floor.
Hey!
Annalene stepped up, only to freeze as one of the Titans growled. The other balled his fist and punched a display, knocking packages all across the aisle. At the bar, Jabe began to move.
There's no need for trouble, Ben said, interposing his body between the Gamorreans and Annalene.
Bupa leered at him and returned to the flask inside his coat in a move that displayed his blasters to the watchful customers.
What are you supposed to be? A hero?
Not at all, Ben said, kneeling. I'm the janitor.
He began picking up the fallen containers and placing them back on their shelves. Orin stepped out from his office in the back. I'm Orin Gault, he said, his earlier smile gone. He approached Bupa, eyeing him coolly. Can we get you something?
Hardly.
The Gossam sniffed disdainfully as his neck craned. Seeing the room Orin had emerged from, he pointed.
Is that where you do business, Ori?
Some of the time.
Well, let's go.
Twirling his cane, Bupa trotted down the aisle toward the office. Orin gave a look to Annalene and half a glance to Ben before turning to follow. "This'll be just a minute," he told them. The door closed.
"Orin, you've lied to me," Annalene thought. It wasn't just a minute. It had been closer to 15. Each one spent in alternating anxiety and annoyance. Anxiety over what was happening inside the office. The newcomers weren't moisture farmers, to be sure. Orin had dealt with shady folks before. One almost had to in running a ranch the size of his. Some supplier somewhere was always under the massive thumb of a hut. And she'd known Orin to deal with merchants now and again whose property might not have been legally obtained. But that was about cutting corners. This seemed like something else again.
"Do you think the Deveronians sent them to revenge after their partner died?" she had whispered to Ben.
"I'd never known Hotelios to be a vengeful lot," he'd responded.
She'd shooed Callie and Lily outside. Several of the customers had left at the sight and occasional gaseous sound and smell of the Gamorreans, but some of her regulars of sterner stuff remained, keeping a watchful eye from their tables. Jabe had refused to leave, taking station at the gun counter. If Ulbrich could hold out against a Tuscan mob from there, Annalene thought, Jabe should be reasonably safe. She noticed that the old farmer himself had departed, perhaps deciding his adventure the day before was story enough for 1 week. But there was Ben, sorting idly through blankets and evaluating spanners. His eyes casually shifted to the Gamorreans and the closed office door. He was curious, to be sure, but not nearly as anxious as Annalene, and his presence had made her feel calmer. Calm enough that she could feel annoyed. If the Gamorreans had ever been to a store before, Annalene couldn't tell. They grabbed whatever they wanted from the shelves, as if it were their own private pantry. They were making a mess, but as long as they were stuffing their faces, they weren't breaking things. Or people.
"That's not good," Ben whispered as he passed her. "The store survived Tuscans. It can handle this." "No, I mean the shorter one just ate a handful of metal bolts. He'll regret that."
Annalene had swept her fifth aisle in the Gamorrean's wake when the office door opened. She strained to hear Bupa's words.
"Not gonna work, Galt. You may be a big man here,"
the gossam said, emerging,
"but this little kingdom of yours is a dust mote in the boss's eye."
Orin stepped out and put his hands on his hips.
"Well, you can tell your boss, or anyone who wants to know. This oasis is for good people. We don't want you around."
He cast a sideways glance to the dining area, where he saw the wide-eyed customers listening intently. He pointed to the exit.
"Now go and take your muscle with you."
Bupa beckoned to his fat companions.
"Let's go, boys. This place stinks."
He looked around, his snout crumpling.
"You've had Tuscans here."
The trio filed out of the building. Orin followed and stood in the doorway, yelling out after them.
"And keep that blasted music off as you go!"
Annalene stepped to the window, watching in amazement. Bupa was back in his ludicrous vehicle, pulling away, quietly. She looked back to Orin. What was that all about? Orin turned back to face the occupants of the store.
"It's nothing," he said, straightening. "Some gangsters hoping to shake down honest folk for protection money. An old story."
He pointed a thumb out the window.
"But it turns out that the settlers' call has multiple uses. Once they heard how fast we'd gotten an army here to fight the Tuscans, they lost interest."
The statement was delivered as modestly as any she could recall coming from Orin's mouth, and it sent a wave of excitement through his audience. Several customers approached, eager to talk to him about joining the call fund. Annalene looked at Ben.
the man seemed as confused by the experience as she was. Annalene turned to sweep up the remains of the Gamorreans' dining, but Orin stepped free from the crowd and tugged at her sleeve.
Oh, Annie, we need to talk about your land speeder.
Annalene did a double take. It wasn't the subject she'd expected was on his mind now, not with new business at hand.
There's a delay, Orin said, sounding earnest. Glomer said so.
But you don't have to worry, he said. Releasing her sleeve, he took her hand. I'm gonna get something sorted out. In the meantime, you can use the USV-5.
Your land speeder?
The offer startled Annalene. Orin's luxury vehicle was the pride of his existence. She suspected the only reason he let his son behind the controls was to make it look as if Orin rated a driver.
I don't mind, Orin said, bringing his other hand atop hers.
He clasped them tightly and looked directly at her. After all, you're almost family. Annalene's eyes widened. At the mention of her land speeder repair, she had expected Orin's usual excuse with a smile routine. But this was different. He looked serious. A meaningful expression for others, but Orin looked that way so infrequently, she had no index to measure his sincerity against.
Family, he said again, loudly enough so those around could hear.
Annalene was aware of eyes watching from around the room. Part of her wanted to ask where this was coming from. Instead, she could only stammer,
Thanks.
She withdrew her hand and stepped back. Orin turned his head and saw Ben lingering in the next aisle.
Oh, Kenobi,
he said dryly. Were you ready to talk business about the fund?
Ben shrugged. I'm sorry, I may have been wasting your time.
Orin looked back coolly. No law against it. He looked over at the mess on the floor. You know, Ben, stuff keeps happening when you're here. I hate that we keep inconveniencing you.
Yes, I should be about my business,
Ben said mildly. He bowed and turned away. Orin walked back toward his office, the exultant customers following.
Annalene goggled. Did Orin just tell one of my friends to leave?
Suddenly indignant, she stomped after Orin, intending to ask exactly that. If it had been a dismissal, it was the lightest, politest she'd ever heard. But no one but she had the right to tell anyone in her store what to do. Just as she reached the back of the crowd, however, something told her to look back. Ben was gone. A breathless Callie met her just outside the door to the livery.
Did Ben leave? She asked anxiously. Rue's gone.
Yep.
Sighing, Annalene looked back into the store.
And he never got the water keg we owe him.
Bizarre. Where do you think he's from, Mom?
I don't know.
But wherever it is, they sure don't understand the concept of shopping.
Meditation. Enough. Just 3 visits and chaos. I shouldn't have gone. I'm endangering the mission. I won't go back there again. And needless to say, I'll be doing these chats mentally from now on. I expect you understand why.
Part 3. The Bright Center. Chapter 25.
Sand people lived with sores every day.
At birth, every Tuscan infant was swaddled tightly in bandages. The nurses worked so fast, Ayak had never seen her children's faces. Channeled through little mouthpieces, her son's cries had been tinny and agonized. Babies had no way of appreciating the curse that existence represented, nor did they appreciate the shame of exposed flesh. But they quickly became acquainted with the price the coverings exacted on the body. Numberless in a lifetime, sores simply had to be endured.
Kishik had been slow to learn that years earlier, the human abductee had thought her wrappings were something that could be changed for cleanliness or comfort. She was wrong. Sand people added to their birth wrap as they grew. Each new patch a testament to their defiance and survival. If a pebble got into the wrappings, it was simply layered over. The carbuncle it caused became a reminder of the past. A funnel plant simply grew new skin over its wounds. A Tuscan could do the same. But Yark understood that defeat was just another sore sand people lived with. Defeats had to be felt, each and every one, and remembered. And in the days since the massacre at the gorge, a Yark had felt it every time she opened her eye. The survivors in the pillars were pathetic, clinging to life like lichen. The first few days had been the worst, with the remaining handful of warriors making pitiful forays to find hubba gourds. Proud raids indeed. The arguments followed. Those posed less danger to a Yark now, since most of her rivals were dead. But hapless elders walking in circles decrying their fates irritated her greatly. And finally, the sacred well in the pillars, usually reliable, was dry most days now. The clan's need hadn't been reduced much by the massacre. A herd of ownerless banthas remained, and it made no sense to butcher them, whatever tradition said. The warriors had blamed a Yark and the failed raid for the water problems too, despite the fact that word was filtering in of similar issues for other clans elsewhere. If Tatooine had grown angry with its tenants, all sand people were suffering, not just one tribe. A Yark had no time for recriminations. For while keeping the group from dissolving had taken most of her time, she had still found spare hours for the important thing, keeping watch on Ben. The human's lair was close, farther to the west, along the northern face of the Jundland. A Yark had found it easily. The winds had been light, and while Ben had shown guile in his attempts to hide his footsteps, no one could track like a Tuscan. Ben had not returned to the oasis in many days. A Yark had wondered about that. Didn't he protect the human woman, Annalene? The compound was her home. Had she moved to his? A Yark didn't know, but wasn't about to venture to the oasis to find out. That would be madness now. One day, however, a Yark had spotted Ben riding east. There were cities that way, but he wasn't taking the fastest route. Rather, he kept to the ridgeline, avoiding contact with settlements. Unable to range far without leaving her defenseless clan behind, a Yark had lost him. So instead, she sat with her bantha and waited, and watched. Ben returned the next day to his home. His only cargo was the camping gear he'd taken with him. Whatever his trip east had been, it wasn't a supply run. What drove a human? A Yark wished she had spent more time listening to Sherrod Het. He had been unwilling to talk about his earlier life with the outsiders. That, after all, was what had driven him to join the Tuscans. She hadn't even asked Kishik many questions. The Sand People had no interest in understanding their enemies. It was enough to know that they bled and died when attacked. But now, with the might of her band broken, a Yark needed to understand. This Ben wanted something all beings did. It governed his habits and movements. Was the thing he wanted to the east? A Yark would have to consider that another time. The gourd gatherers were late in return.